toe.
Well, all right, but just remember, it's only a game.
Yeah, whatever. Let's play.
Objective Secure Podcast. My name is Mike.
Hi, I'm Emma.
This is episode 52. It's only a game. As Elmo just got told, it is only a game. And we're going to be talking sportsmanship and I suppose we should use the C word, cheating. But sort of some of the bigger implications. We've seen Vanguard Tactics, which there'll be a link in the show notes of this episode to take you to that video. Around some issues that one of the guys at Vanguard Tactics had at the London GT with a particular player. And he talks about how he feels like the community at large could handle some of the inappropriate behaviour at tournaments. So this was a good opportunity for us to have a conversation around how to be a better sport at events and how to handle those players who you might not get on with as well. And then obviously, should you encounter anyone who's doing something that is against the core rules of the game and is cheating, then how you can best approach and handle that to, I suppose, end up with an outcome that feels okay for you and is in the best interest of the community who's playing. So it's a bit of a complex topic, but one that we're going to do our best with in the time we have.
Yes.
So, but before we get into that topic, we should talk very quickly about a few of the releases and news and so on. The first piece of news is not a private one, but it's a personal one for us. It's we hit 1,500 likes on Facebook, which is exciting.
Yay. Well, we hit 1,503.
Well, that's it. At the time of recording, it's 1,503, which just tells you how late we are in recording this if you've seen the posts on the Facebook page, because we are running a bit behind due to school holidays and some other stuff going on. But we did get there, which is awesome.
Yes.
So thank you very much to everyone who
likes it. And, all that
yeah,
kind
does
of
all
stuff.
That sort of stuff.
If you don't like our Facebook page, please go do that.
Yeah. We also had a friend of the show send me a link, which I was very excited about, to a Russian website, which is always a risk.
So excited you didn't tell me about this.
Nope.
Awesome.
Klukva Miniatures is the website. And he tagged me on Instagram and said, hey Mikey, you need to go and check this out, because he knew how much of a fan I was of two specific characters from, I'm going to say, the late 90s and early 2000s, so they're not relevant for 40k or any particular game system at the moment. If you've ever heard of Legacy of Kain, Blood Omen, and Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver, then the characters of Kain and Raziel will mean something to you. If they don't, then I'll have to make sure this picture's in the show notes of these two miniatures, because I've wanted miniatures of these two for, well, forever.
Well, not forever, since the 90s or
2000s. Well, whenever the first games came out, yep. And by sheer coincidence, one of our listeners was on Instagram, saw someone did up a diorama with these two miniatures, tagged me in it. I went to the diagram and scrolled through the comments and found someone going, oh my God, I love these, where can I buy them? Follow the link, 11 euros each. And they're currently coming from Russia.
Right, now I see why you didn't tell me about
They're already ordered now, so Look, it's a 30-day delivery window and they have to be produced first. They're going to be here for my birthday. So
how many things are you planning on getting for your birthday?
I don't know, but at this point in time,
these two
miniatures are coming. So they're called the Soul Vampire and the Bloody Vampire. They're 32 mil scale from what I can gather on the website, and it looks like they're on 25 mil or 32 mil bases. So they're going to be roughly Games Workshop scale miniatures, cast in resin. So I'm really excited to get them. This Soul Reaver in Kain's hand is probably a little bit on the short side, since it is meant to be a very long sword, but the limitations of sculpting in resin are what they are. But yeah, very excited to get those. So I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes that'll take you to klukvarminiatures.com and you can check them out. And yeah, I was very excited to get that. Moving on, we'll jump very quickly into some of the Games Workshop releases. This was a model I did resist buying, which I think Emma was pretty happy about, was the Bandai Space Marine action figure.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews of it, but I suppose it's like anything that's coming out for Games Workshop, isn't it?
It's funny how many people have gotten upset at this particular kit, not just because it's an action figure rather than a kit, but because of the lead time. So when you go to Games Workshop's Warhammer community page, there's a section that says pre-order opens on October 5th and closes on November 2nd, or when they hit 9,000, because 9,000 is the production run. There's only 9,000 of these things. However,
I'm actually surprised that they haven't sold out.
They have.
All right.
I saw it posted today that they'd finally sold out of them. So it took them 4 days to sell out worldwide. Yeah. What's interesting, though, is the amount of people that are getting upset that it says the delivery for this product on the website says 270 days.
Oh!
Because the estimated delivery time is mid-next year.
Far out.
So it says ships from Asia early 2020. But I think they've given themselves some room there in terms of what early 2020 actually means. So you're paying up front. In Australian dollars, it was $210 to buy one. It looks really cool. Like, there's lots of articulation and it's you know, got optional hands and different weapons and stuff for it. But at $210 for the Ultramarines action figure was a big call in my mind. Like, it's nice, but it's going to sit on a shelf. Like, it's going to sit on a shelf longer than a Titan will, because the Titan might get played once every year or two. This is, at $210, it's as expensive as sort of Imperial Knights and those sorts of models that get used daily in some cases. Mm. Maybe not in our house, but yeah, it's an interesting kit for Games Workshop to go in with Bandai, and I feel like it's the precursor, sort of a test run to see what they can do with some of the... Obviously, Bandai produce Gunpla kits. They don't want to compete with them directly on a plastic kit, but on something like this that they can work in conjunction with. Yeah.
It's interesting to see how many partnerships they're coming up with.
Yeah, well, between the deal that's in the works with Marvel, plus the live-action TV, plus the animated series, plus, well, obviously this one with Bandai, and then anything else that they come up with in the future. I mean, there's always been talks of a live-action movie. And
certainly a lot more to bring it into more mainstream.
Yeah. I saw something today on one of the popular Games Workshop covering websites, not Games Workshop themselves, saying that this particular writer estimated that there were less than 5 million people in the world that bought Games Workshop products.
I would not agree with that at all.
No, I reckon that number is significantly higher than that.
I would say there would be more than 5,000 in Western Australia.
No, 5 million across the world.
You said 5,000.
Oh, I meant it's 5 million worldwide, is what he said. Oh,
okay. You did say 5 million.
I reckon that's grossly underestimated. Because if you think of, like, we get somewhere between 300 and 400 players coming to at least one tournament that we track in down under pairings a year. And if that represents, I reckon it'd be 1/20th or maybe less of people who would go into a Games Workshop store and buy their product, then that number of, say, 400 people is probably more like, you know, 10,000, 20,000 customers for WA, and our population base is only 2 million people. Mm. Once you extrapolate that out into some of the heavier population centres, like, the, I reckon 5 million worldwide is a really small number.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was all around the... And it's another topic we'll have to cover for another episode about esports and where the game's going and some of the places that want to take it down that esports road. But that's a topic for another day.
You know, I'm all for planning and all of this kind of thing, but there's all this, where's it going? Is there any chance that we can actually just stop and enjoy where it is at the moment? And in all seriousness, it is something that comes up for me a lot when we talk about things like WYSIWYG and... you know, today's topic, and, you know, we've covered things around sportsmanship before. We're actually I feel that we're in a pretty good place in WA at the moment as far as events go and the kinds of players that we have attending and the behaviour of those players and the sportsmanship. And I feel really, I have this apprehension about speaking about sportsmanship and speaking about some of the topics like we're going to today, because I feel it sets this tone that actually what's happening isn't good.
Yeah.
And I really want to take a moment to go, you know what? What's happening is really good. Mm. We are in a really good place. We've got, as you said, hundreds of people who come to events in Western Australia every year. The number of
That's not taking into account show.
No, no, no. Right,
I'm talking 40K tournaments.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, so was I. I was talking only about 40K tournaments. And then, you know, talking about coming to show, we're at thousands of people who come. But coming to events to play in those events for 40K, we've got hundreds of people who are coming. They are well-behaved. They are kind. They are generous. They're good sports. They're generally guys. So I was going to say they're really nice guys. And the girls who we have coming are really lovely also. So I just think let's try and remember that where we are now is good. So while it's great to look forward to where we're going and what we're hoping to do,
yeah,
take a minute to go, hey, let's actually see where we came from 5 years ago and where we are now, and let's be a bit excited about the WA gaming community at the moment.
Yeah, and look, in general, worldwide, it's pretty good.
Yeah, I don't play with any of them.
Fair enough.
So, and the problem that I have is that I only see the hype that happens on Facebook and
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So I only see about people who cheated at LVO or poor terrain at events or, you know, whatever people are complaining about. I don't see posts where people are going, you know what, this is awesome. So I'm going to take a moment to go, you know what, this is awesome. We're in a really good place.
Fair enough. There you go.
Mm. So maybe let's change the topic and let's talk about this is awesome instead.
Fair enough. That could be we could do that next time.
Yeah, well, it could be a lot quicker if we just do that. All right, sorry, I hijacked it.
No, that's okay. The next part of this is we're going to have a quick look at the Battle Sisters Bulletin. Part 18 has been released to showcase off the upcoming army box, mainly because there was a leaked photo through Japan that came out showing off these models. So Games Workshop within 24 hours went, no, here's the high-res, nice version. So it's 5 Seraphim, 3 Arcoflagellants, 4 Sisters Repentia, and a Repentia Mistress, a Penitent Engine, 10 Sisters of Battle, and a Canoness from the looks of it. And the Canoness is the one that they gave away at Nova.
Mm-hmm.
By current points value, I made that out, including the weapons that I can make out that all the models are armed with, I made that out at 479 points in that box under current points value, mm-hmm. give or take. So we can't be far away from this book now. We're now at the point where they're publishing Battle Sisters, you know, photos and fully painted stuff, and yeah. It can't be too far away. Pictures of the Codex have been released.
It makes sense for that to be a 500-point box.
Well, the biggest
480-something seems a bit odd.
It'll be to do with war gear, and if they've adjusted the points and stuff, like I had to work off the beta rules from Chapter Proof, so it'll be a 500-point box is my guess. There's some new artwork been done for the Arcoflagellants. They've actually got female Arcoflagellants for the first time, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. What's bad about that particular model is it looks like they're about to kick a football.
Yeah.
But
I see what you mean, but no, it wasn't the first thing that came to mind.
I see someone showed it to me with the football photoshopped in, and now that's all I can see.
Yeah, well, that's like the other one with the kayak, and that's all I can see.
The incubi,
well.
Yeah. So the models normally have at least one limb replaced with a weapon. It looks like they've given them the, I can't think of the right name for the weapon now. The reason they're called Arcoflagellants is they've got big flails for arms. And I can't think of the proper word for the weapon now.
Yeah, well, I'm not a fan of those models at all.
I actually like the metal ones. I've got a set of the metal ones, which are based off Damien 1427, which was the Inquisitor scale version. He's 54 mil, which I don't think you can buy anymore. I don't actually have that model. But they sort of at the wrists replace him with big lasher tendrils and stuff, whereas the ones that they've done in plastic, I don't know.
Do you know what the one that you say is kicking a football?
Yeah.
It actually, to me, looks like it's wearing a mining helmet.
Yep.
So that's why it just, with this weird black thing sticking out, so to me, it looks like they're bouncing along, walking on the bottom of the ocean, and it just looks It just looks weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping that we get some other, you know, there's three variants, or actually it looks like two variants in the box. And I'm assuming that they'll be snap fits, because there's also some duplicates of the Repentia. And given there's only three or four models in each of those squads, it's a bit disappointing to see duplicates instantly.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what with this kit's multi-part, or whether it's snap fit.
Yeah.
But you know what? They've also got the metal ones all on last chance to buy now. Mm. So the end is nigh.
Yeah.
So that release, you know, it'll be a Christmas release at this point, I assume. And the big box comes with all the models plus an exclusive edition of the Codex, the data cards, dice, transfer sheet, and the core rules booklet for what that's worth as well. I do quite dig the Repentia Superior with her whips.
Yeah, I like that.
It's actually a far cry from the metal version, because the metal version was quite portly, and she looked more like a matron than a battle sister. Okay. So this version's much more armored and much more in line with the aesthetic. She does have like a fancy robed collar and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's good to see. That's kind of the last model in the range that we hadn't seen, along with the Arcoflagellants. So very cool. Very excited for them. I'm guessing if that box set works out the way I think it do for Australians, that'll be about a $400 box set.
Yep.
Which neatly leads into Blood of the Phoenix, because they've previewed all the models that are coming in the Blood of the Phoenix box. And the models themselves, it's an interesting box, because we're getting Jainzar and Drahazar plus five Banshees and five Incubi. So they're all new models.
Mm-hmm.
We're then getting a Falcon Grav tank, a Viper jet bike, both of which were... The Viper jet bike is the first Eldar vehicle kit in plastic from, I want to say, 1994, with the Falcon very shortly thereafter.
Like, well, that, you can say 1994. I don't know. Maybe
it was 98. Somewhere in that space. Early, mid to late.
I don't care, and anyone who does will correct you.
Yeah, probably. So both of those are old kits. They've had a weapon sprue thrown into the box at some point during 4th edition, I think it was, and other than that, they haven't changed.
Yep.
On the Drakkari half, we're getting 5 Hellions, 5 Scourges, and a Venom. Now, between them, plus the Phoenix Lords, plus the 2 new units, you could actually argue this is the box of least used models in competitive play for both these armies ever. Because
interesting choice.
Almost none of these units, except maybe the Venom, because the Venom does turn up. I've got a lot of those myself.
Yeah.
Hellions, you never see in competitive lists. You don't see Incubi, you don't see Scourges, you generally don't see Howling Banshees, although I'm a sucker for them as well. I really rate the Falcon, but again, you don't see it.
Often. You don't see these things often. Not that you don't ever see them.
No. But it does feel like Games Workshop going, hey, we're not selling any of these kits.
Let's put them all
in one big box. Because you
a really expensive box that we won't sell either.
Well, again, best guess, ignoring the new kit, so ignoring the 2 units and the 2 characters, the retail on everything else in the box is about $260 Australian, $265 Australian.
Yeah.
Those 2 squads of infantry, I'm guessing, are going to be about $65 a go. And the 2 characters could be anywhere from $50 to $70.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the price for this. I know in the States it's a $200 plus dollar US dollars, which means here it's going to be $400.
Yeah.
And you get like a Blood of Cain, a Blood of the Phoenix, booklet. Now, my only sort of reservations about this, I'm not willing to spend $400 in this box. I won't. As much as I want those new models, I would probably use everything in there for something at some point in time between now and whenever I keel over or stop playing, whichever comes first. The fact is that most of those kits are going to be sat in boxes or on sprues.
Yeah.
If the Blood of the Phoenix book, though, has content in it that isn't part of Phoenix Rising with the actual hardback book, that'll irk me. Because if it has extra stuff in it that the other book doesn't, then that'll frustrate me a lot. Because then I'll have to go to eBay to try and get a copy of it. So it'll be interesting to see what that is. I'm hopeful that as soon as one of the stores in Perth here gets a copy of it, we can
pop in and
trundle out and have a look. Because if it's all duplicate stuff, then that won't bother me. But I can't justify spending. You know, even if I came to you and said, hey, I'm going to buy this, and you went, yeah, no worries, not a problem. You don't need more Eldar. It's fine. You can have them. yeah, I still struggle with the idea of how expensive it is.
Well, it's not how expensive it is. It's how expensive it is for models that for what, are not.
Yeah, for what you're going to get in it, yeah. And that the worst part is it's not even two legal armies. You can't field this in match, like organized match play, because there's no troop choice for either. All it needs is one troop in either, like in both of them, to make them legal. And it feels like they could have done that by dropping like one unit from each. Like you drop the Hellions and the Viper and put in Guardians and Carbolite Warriors, and you've instantly got legal armies.
It sounds as though it's going to be difficult for people to split the box, though.
Yeah.
To find someone to split the box with. And that's what often happens when boxes like this come out.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants this half? I want this half. Does anyone want to, you know, go halves or that kind of thing? If people don't want those models, or, you know, they're not popular choices for models.
Yeah, it makes it even harder.
Yeah.
I'm actually really hopeful the Viper and the Falcon end up on eBay really cheap in mass. Because I'd love to have a bunch of Vipers, but I'm not willing to fork out the $50+ for a kit that's older than our kids, older than I've known you. So, yeah, I'd love to have a few of them, but not at the cost that they are.
Not this week, hey?
No. If anyone does want to split the box, I'm sure you can head to your local Games Workshop. Most of those, the staff in those stores, or Warhammer, I should say, as they're known now.
Well, there's still Games Workshop in some places, aren't they?
Yeah, but not in WA.
Are they all?
I think they're all Warhammer
all
now.
Branded?
Yeah. So, normally the stores will help you find someone else to
yeah,
split
know
them within.
Who might be interested.
Yeah. So, and if you do get a copy before you hear the next episode, when we've hopefully seen a copy, then let me know if there is stuff in the Blood of the Phoenix book compared to the Phoenix Rising hardback. See if there's any differences in it. Either way, I'm still really excited for the Build Your Own Craft Worlds and some of the stuff they've been previewing.
Mm-hmm.
They also answered one of my questions, which was the sprues. How many models are we going to get per unit, and are they going to include the Exarchs? And
those,
it's boxes of five models, and it looks like there's an alternate build for the Exarch and the Clavex to build them as standard troopers.
Yeah.
So the only reservation I have about that is I'm hopeful that there's an alternate base part for the Exarch for the Banshees, because you don't want to have your squad leader stood up on this big fancy base and then another
regular
Banshee on the same base. So
hopefully that's something like an add-on that you can put onto the base rather than it coming like that.
But, and it's the same with the Clavex, because the Clavex, I mean, obviously at that point it's an alternate helm and weapons and backed banners basically, so he should be pretty straightforward. They've also included all the weapon options for those two characters. So there's options for the Demiclave and the Claves for the Clavex. And then the Banshees, they've given you the Execution of the Mirror Swords, the sword and pistol. And they've brought back the Triskel, which is basically a three-bladed throwing disc. Mm-hmm. So it's cool to have that back, because we've never had a model for that other than on Jane's R.
Hmm.
And they gave us rules for it in 5th edition, 6th edition, to go in the Exarchs, and then never gave us a model for it. Then took it out of the Codex for this edition. And now they put it back in. Yeah. So
there you go.
Yeah. So lots coming from Games Workshop. And obviously, as the Eldar stuff gets released, my level of hyperactivity is only going to increase. And with all the Creator and Craftworld stuff now, my army is in limbo, because I'm waiting to see what the rules are for that before I paint anything. So instead, I'm just pulling stuff out of the dungeon and building it. So it's not costing us any money, at least.
No, but I do notice that the Titan isn't getting...
We're not talking about that.
Okay.
Moving on. One thing I did want to mention before we take a break is one of the local hobbyists here, Jacob, who runs the Rockingham Historical Gamers.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically being part of the 1UP Gaming Marathon. So the 1UP Gaming Marathon team are rolling dice, fighting bosses, and being master tacticians for 24 hours on the 26th to the 27th of October, which is the Saturday just prior to our doubles and mixed gaming day event. 2021 was...
That's 2011.
Sorry, 2011.
Because 2021 is
in the
two
future.
Years time.
2021, 2 years' time. Yeah, it's in the future.
Didn't I just say two
I don't
years'
know.
Time?
It's late.
It's not that late.
It feels like it. They've raised like $15,000 for charity dedicated to causes affecting the gaming community and their families. Jacob this year has said they're gaming for Multiple Sclerosis Society of WA and the Multiple Sclerosis Corporation and SANE Australia. So they're going to play all types of games within a 24-hour period. Video games, including console, PC, tablet gaming, mobile phones, tabletop games, whether it's card games, board games, miniature war games, and role play. So this year, the Rockingham Historical Gamers Club, hosted by Good Games Rockingham, will be operating their store for 24 hours during the event. So if you're interested, you can check out 1UpMarathon.com, the Rockingham Historical Gamers.wordpress.com, and you can head down on Saturday the 26th and play games at Good Games Rockingham and get some last minute practice for our mixed gaming day the following day.
If you get some sleep before the mixed gaming day, that would be plenty. Awesome.
Yeah, look, just finish up in Rockingham at like 10 and 10:30, go home, get 6 to 8 hours sleep, and then come and play with us.
Yeah, perfect.
So, yeah, really, really cool to see Jacob spearheading that to raise some money for some worthy causes.
Now, there are some other people who have been key drivers behind that in that Rockingham Historical Gamers group as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So,
I've spent all this talking to Jacob, And I have to say sorry to everyone else who has been heavily involved and supportive, and including Good Games Rockingham.
Yeah.
So, very much appreciated. Check it out. And because we're going to release this before the event, you've got plenty of time to go and check it out. There'll be links in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
You got anything else to cover before we take our break?
Yes. So, I just saw when we were looking at the Games Workshop pages, I just saw the thing about how to photograph minis, which has reminded me that the... The WA Paint West Oz Miniature Painters Group are running the Brushmasters painting competition.
Yep.
So that is basically you paint your model and then photograph it and submit the photos to for entry, and that is an event that we're sponsoring as well. And the deadline for that is Friday the 13th of December. So there is a Facebook event, which is Brushmasters 2019 deadline.
I'll chuck that in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Winners are going to be announced on the 1st of January 2020. So they've only got 2 weeks to judge that over Christmas. Anyway, so if you're a West Australian and you enjoy painting miniatures, then there's a whole heap of different categories and things there.
Yep.
Check that out. We have Varsity on Monday.
Yep, Monday the 14th of October.
Yep, so that's happening mixed.
And November and December Varsity dates are already
as well.
Yep, already booked and confirmed.
We've got our mixed gaming day coming up on the 27th, which is doubles 40K,
doubles bolt action,
and singles War Machine.
Yep.
We're
actually going to try and sneak Kill Team in there as well if we can manage it.
We better hurry up.
I'm trying.
It's like a fortnight away.
I know. I'm doing my best.
We don't have a high tee because we're obviously hoping that partners come and play in that event.
Yep.
However, if the partners aren't playing, they're of course always welcome to come down. I'm participating in Froctober this year, which is wearing a dress every day for October to raise awareness about ovarian cancer. So I won't be in my bright orange shirt. I'm going to have to see if I can find a bright orange dress instead.
We've got your bright orange jacket.
Yes, true.
Depending on how hot or cold it is.
That's right. So if anybody else feels like wearing a dress that day or costume.
That could be an interesting one for some of the guys.
Well, you know, just throwing it out there. we're all about raising awareness about all sorts of things. So that's happening. I saw that Toy Soldier Cartel are running an event, ITC event, on the 8th of December.
Yep, Sunday the 8th of December.
Sunday, day before our last Varsity event for the year.
They hit me up and said, is that date going to be okay? And I said, absolutely. Like, our Varsity nights are club nights where we get to hang out and laugh. And
yeah, that Varsity night will be slightly different in that we are trying to organise the speed dating gaming.
Yep. but yeah, so that'll be cool for them to be hosting an event. Depending on that weekend is actually the weekend of your birthday though.
It
so
is,
whether
yes.
whether or not I get to play is another matter entirely.
You don't.
There you go.
Because it's December on top of everything else, and you know that's my Christmas month.
It is.
So no, you're busy.
So I don't get to play.
I don't think so.
Okay. So
actually, I think I'm working that day, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
So
I was about to say, so if someone from the Toy Soldier Cartel wants to send like some flowers and some like begging and stuff to Emma, that'd be great, so I get to play.
I'm just checking, but I'm fairly sure I'm working that day.
Oh, well, we can check later, but at the moment, you've heard it here first. I I'm going to have to wait until another event to get my new Elder Army out on the table. Mm. All right, we'll call it there.
Yep,
and we'll be back in a second to cover off some, it won't be all, but some of the topic of sportsmanship at tournaments. So let's preface this discussion with it's going to be a touchy subject.
Okay.
And we're not going to point fingers at anyone. We're not going to accuse anyone of anything. But understanding our behavior at tournaments as a player and how to deal with confrontation at the table and behavior at the table can be really important to others' experience as well as your own.
And so in that frame of mind and that context, let me rephrase that and saying that we're not pointing fingers at all. This is in no way aimed at anyone in particular. What we are aiming to do is highlight some of the issues that have been raised. And the reason that I'm reframing it is because it really pushes my buttons when people use "but" in there, because it just dismisses what you said before that. It's important to be aware of what your behavior, or your behavior can look like to other people. I'm letting you know kindly and lovingly not to use "but" in sentences like that.
Fair enough. So there was a
and I'm also doing it at the time. I'm not waiting two or three days to then come back and go, "It really upset me when you used "but" in that sentence."
That is true. That is
doing
true.
It right now.
Okay. Now that we've said that, anything else?
I might be done.
You might be done.
Might not be, but okay. Who knows?
Well, there was a video published on Vanguard Tactics, like I mentioned in the introduction.
Okay.
The video was called "My Opponent," in inverted commas, "and His Yellow Card in Warhammer 40,000. Now, at the time of this recording, that video has 80,000 views.
Wow.
Now, that's not big for a number of different places and channels, but in our community,
that's huge.
That's pretty big reach. And it's
I'd quite like to get 80 people watching some of our videos.
Well, I'll have to show you some of the numbers later. Mm. Now, the gentleman who produced it is a guy by the name of Stephen, mm-hmm. who I've been speaking to offline, and hopefully we'll have an interview with him
coming up
in a future episode to talk about this and some of his suggestions. Mm-hmm. He clarifies in the comments at the bottom of the video that the purpose of this video is to help people in his position know what to do and what action to take, highlight foul play in competitive play and what we can do as a community to stop it, and the actions TOs and referees need to take in order to protect players and how being firm and fair is the best way for people to learn. The video is not a witch hunt, so please do not ask him who the player was. It's relatively easy to figure out who the player in question was.
And I was like, "But I'm not going to say it." And then it came out of your mouth.
I'm not going to say it either because I've never met.
No, I was going to say it would be quite easy to find out if you just.
Yeah, because of the way the scoring's done and the events are, online software public. Being what it is, it's fairly easy to figure out who this player is. And I've never met this player, never had any interactions with this player in any way, shape, or form. So we're going to leave any of the speculation about that particular player at that. But the bit that the three points that he raises around help people in his position know what to do and what action to take, highlight foul play and what we can do as a community to stop it, and the actions TOs and referees need to take are kind of the three points I wanted to address in this.
Okay.
Because it all ties into sportsmanship and behaviour.
It does. I just wonder whether or not, before we get into that, is it worth going into why we don't use a red card, yellow card system?
You can if you like, because we don't actually agree on this whole scenario either, if you're listening out there. Emma and I have different opinions on managing this behaviour to boot.
Yeah. I don't know that it's that different. I just think that when you go in with a red card, yellow card system, you're actually expecting poor behaviour. And I actually don't think that at our events we expect poor behaviour. We set a standard that there are certain standards that we expect all players to adhere to. And so if we then come in and go, but if you don't, then these are the things that are going to happen. We we acknowledge people who go above and beyond in their sportsmanship through our sportsmanship scores. But
which again is not a perfect system.
It's certainly not a perfect system, and I really don't like the system that we've got. However, we haven't come up with a better one yet. But yeah, I just really don't believe in the yellow card, red card system.
See, you're about rewarding good behaviour rather than penalising bad behaviour.
It's not about, well, yes, I am, definitely. I'm much more about
Positive reinforcement.
Positive
rather than
reinforcement.
Negative.
And supporting people through their positive interactions, but also supporting people through how to deal with a negative behaviour as well, and how to use that as a teaching moment rather than using it to reprimand someone. I think you're going to get a lot further by quietly speaking to somebody than publicly giving them a yellow card or a red card. You know, there are certain situations, we haven't had one yet, but there are certain situations where people would be ejected from events. However, I just don't think that we would go into it with publicly shaming people.
Yeah.
And that to me is what the yellow card, red card system does. It does actually publicly shame people.
Well, the argument counter to that is by publicly shaming those people, you can force change.
I don't know that you can force change. I just think it creates controversy.
The thing is, though, that by giving them a yellow card or red card, you're highlighting their behaviour to the room and to the internet at large, which is a bad thing in some ways because it creates an internet mob.
That's it. And then you have a whole heap of people who weren't at the event.
Yeah, throwing their two cents in.
Exactly.
And but at the same time,
privately speaking to people has, in my experience and in our experience, has certainly worked out.
We've taken people aside on more than one occasion.
Yeah.
And had quiet words to them and just kind of said, you know, we've had this issue highlighted to us. Pull your head in.
That is not what we've said at all.
Well, no, but I'm abridging it because I don't want to give specific examples I don't want
to. But we wouldn't ever say to somebody, we've had this has come up, pull your head in. We'd say to people, this has been brought to our attention.
Yeah, that's why I said it was abridged.
Can you share with me your version of what's happened here? Can we talk through that? Actually, this is what we need to happen moving forward.
Yeah.
And this is why we need that to happen. Are you going to be able to work with that? If you are, sweet. If you're not, then ours are probably not the right events for you to attend.
Yeah. And everyone we've spoken
to... See how that sounds a lot better than pull your head in?
Yours is just the nicer way of putting it.
Yes, it is.
Look, I'm getting blunt in my old age. Leave me alone.
But you're not blunt in person. That's my point. That when we're running events, you aren't blunt with people.
No.
Well, at least not that I've seen. Maybe you are. When,
that's why they come to you instead of me.
But that's why I think a red card and a yellow card, I think, is blunt. Whereas this isn't about being blunt. It's about actually sharing with people the behaviour change that needs to happen.
See, the flip side of that is when you start looking at professional sport.
We're not a professional sport.
No, but that's as soon as you bring judges and organised play and prizes, I think is the key part of that equation, into the mix. If you're trying to hold everyone to a minimum standard, then the people who don't meet that minimum standard, soccer is a great example. You do something illegal, you argue with a ref. That's a great example. If you stand there and the ref says, no, this is what happens, and then you argue with the ref on just about any sporting pitch in the world, you'll cop a yellow card because the ref's decision is final. So I definitely think there's places in our community where you could have that. The difference is, I suppose, that most of the community in WA know us and they know us very well. And so maybe those arguments don't happen here in WA because the players that are coming to our events trust the decisions that are being made and what's happening, so we don't get a lot of those confrontations. But, you know, if for example, you know, you live in one part of the world and you fly to the other part of the world, you don't know who's running the event, you know, and you start arguing, that's a lack of respect in general at that point. But
yeah, but I still think there's room there to actually go, this isn't appropriate in this particular situation, and that's written into our code of conduct.
Yeah, but at what point does it then become, no, okay, that's not okay, and the yellow card is meant to be there of, I don't want to kick you out, but you need to be told what you're doing is wrong.
So why can't you actually just have that conversation?
because it's not measurable. If I give you a yellow...
Neither are the yellow cards. Yeah,
well, they are if they're done correctly, and that's part of the issue with yellow cards, because there are players who are getting two or three an event when it's meant to be a one, and then most of the time it goes straight to red and you're out the door. So the biggest problem I see with the red-yellow card scenario in most events is that the judging community at large doesn't like handing them out because they don't want to be the bad guy. Don't like confrontation compounds that. And then they don't want
to... I think it's safe to say most of the people that I've met in the gaming community aren't big on confrontation.
But then on top of all of that, do you want to be the TO that then kicks someone out of the event... That's then going to get out into the community, and then you're going to have someone potentially feeding that information out incorrectly as to what, woe is me type stories.
Yeah, but the thing is that I would actually have no issue kicking somebody out.
No, but that's kind of my point, is that part of the issue is actually the judging community not being willing to
I don't think take a red those card actions. And a yellow card makes a difference in that.
I think it's a nice way of giving themselves an out by going, this code of conduct says if you do X, Y, or Z, I give you a yellow card. So you've done that, so here's your yellow card. The difference is escalating that from yellow to red and actually disqualifying someone and saying, there's the door. Because I've never seen that situation happen. Like, I've seen people get multiple yellow cards, admittedly only online. I haven't seen it at an event, but never actually to the point of, there's the door. And that's part of the issue with that code of conduct in my mind, is that if you're going to implement it, you have to be willing to back that up and say, we're done. So, and that all kind of ties together with the whole card. The only way the carding system works is if everyone knows that that's the standard. And if you step outside of these specific boundaries, and that's part of the issue, is the boundaries need to be clear and specific, then you will get this. And then if you do this too many times, then this will happen. And subsequently, there's the door. And it means that you can essentially have anyone managing some of those judges. It opens the door for more judges to get involved, because then they feel protected by having that conduct code sat there.
There is still always going to be the judges who don't have the courage to actually enforce that. And there are still going to be the judges that use that power above and beyond.
And I think part of that all connects to the fact that we don't have a governing body, unlike things like soccer, where you've got FIFA, and motorsport, where you've got all the different governing bodies and things like that, where people make errors. The judges are endorsed by the governing body, and the governing body backs the judges up in those.
Which comes back to what...
We're not Elmo professional sports.
Well, what Elmo and Abby were talking about. You know, this is just a game.
Yeah.
And what I said in the opening, let's actually celebrate where we are and stop going, oh, well, if we were a professional sport. We're not a professional sport. This isn't a professional sport. This is a group of 97 men and 3 women who come together to play with plastic soldiers.
But every one of the professional sports that I started as a game of people doing something silly in their backyard. Yes. How is this any different?
Let people enjoy doing something silly in their backyard.
But I think it's human nature. At some point... The human nature.
When we get there.
Well, that's kind of, we're at that cusp right now with all the esports stuff, because people are now doing computer games competitively and making money off it. And that's, I read an article that was talking about, would you ever conceive of a situation where a player has to pay to go and play at a tournament for Fortnite or StarCraft or pick whatever PC game it is? Because not one of them pays an entrance fee. They get paid to turn up. Because they bring enough viewers through Twitch or whatever, that the sponsors they have pay them to go and play, regardless of the outcome of the event. And then if they win, they get more money. And we're still asking players to pay to come to the tournament, because obviously we're not at the point where we have those sponsorships and those accolades attached to them. So, but we're starting to see the first sort of growths of that mentality hitting the very high ends of tournaments, particularly in 40K. I haven't seen it so much in other parts of the community, and maybe that's because 40K is so the biggest tabletop gaming system in the world today, so maybe it's just the first one that's feeling these effects. But it's an interesting situation to be in, because we're on the edge of the tipping point. So I can only see that if you know, Games Workshop steps in and says, okay, we're gonna run this. Much like Wizards of the Coast and Magic the Gathering circuit. If Games Workshop came in and said, this is what we're doing, this is our expectation, this is the code of conduct, this is the yellow red card system, this is everything we're doing, then the community at large would go, okay. And we'd all jump in the boat and sail away and follow that, because that's the expectation. But while it's not governed by the people who write the game, you're going to have our opinions and we don't agree. And then you've got the people at different events in Australia who don't agree with us and have their own versions. And then there's obviously the ITC code of conduct with the yellow and red cards, which is played in different parts, but not everywhere. So yeah, it's a really complex thing, you know. And does the yellow red card scenario only happen at really competitive tournaments, and the fun hobby events don't do that, and do you get the sportsmanship scores there? So I think the tone of the event is another factor.
I don't at all.
I definitely do.
No.
I see it as two different things.
I don't. I think that your sportsmanship should remain the same regardless of the event that you're playing in.
No, but what I'm saying, yes, it should.
And therefore the expectations around that remain the same.
Yep.
And how that's enforced remain the same as well.
No, see, I don't think so. I think that you tip the point there where you go, we're meant to be having an awesome fun day with lots of cool stuff, and we're going to reward all the good behaviour.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to, we expect you to behave like a decent human being. And as you put in our patrons group, don't be a dick.
I wasn't going to say that, but yeah.
And then if you slip below our minimum standard, then you're going to be penalised because we're playing in a competitive event.
The result is that regardless of what event it is, if you behave in a way that is unacceptable, you will be ejected from the event.
Yeah.
So whether that's done through public shaming or whether that's done privately and professionally and...
But see... I don't think the yellow-red needs to be public, though. Like, if you take someone aside and go, yeah, that's... Or they're arguing with you, for example, and you want to use that... You want to say if they argue with a judge's yellow card, much like it is in a lot of sport. If you pull them aside and go, yeah, man, I'm just letting you know, that's a yellow card, do it again, and this is why you're getting a yellow card. If you do it again, we're going to eject you. You don't have to do it in front of everyone. And then later on, they do it again, and you pull them aside and go, man, I told you this once already. This is your second yellow card. Therefore, it's now a red card, and we're going to ask you to leave. So please go and pack your things and leave. That doesn't need to be a public conversation, and it'd be no different to having that conversation that we do already. It just sets limits and precedents and notations around it, I suppose.
Should we agree to disagree?
Yeah,
we move on to the actual points of this discussion.
Okay, so help people in my position to know what to do and what action to take when confronted with poor behaviour and... or cheating. As a TO and a player, you've got two different... I'll wear the player hat if you like, and you can wear the TO hat for that question.
Okay.
How do you feel about that?
Somewhat anxious.
Okay. So, if a... if you're playing this person...
Yep.
And this person has been confrontational, argumentative, and generally behaving poorly... using inappropriate language, whatever it is that makes you feel uncomfortable, and you say to them, hey man, can you chill out?
Yeah.
And they just keep doing whatever it is they're doing, what should that player do?
Are you asking?
Yep.
As a TO, what should that player do?
So, yeah, so you have you as a TO haven't been called to the table yet, but these two players are clearly not having a good time. One player is being aggressive and all the rest of it. Should that second player then try and get the judge or TO involved?
Yeah.
Right.
Straight away. I think that the same with any conflict resolution that would be in any policy in any workplace. Your first port of call is as a player or, you know, as an employee if it was in a workplace, try and resolve the issue by yourself. If that doesn't work, escalate it. But you need to escalate it straight away, because if you come and tell me about it 3 days later, there is literally nothing I can do about it.
And that's the biggest issue we have.
If you go and tell your friend Simon and Simon comes and tells me about it 3 days later, there's even less I can do about it.
Yeah.
So I need to hear from you as that behavior is happening. Now, ideally, that gives me the opportunity to be able to witness that behavior and to be able to say to you, do you think there's a possibility that you're being a little bit overly sensitive at the moment?
I think...
Hang on. Can I finish? And then if you go, actually, no, this is, you know, it's really disturbing, then depending on what you witness, obviously, then you can step in and go, hey, I need you to tone this down or whatever it is that's the issue. But I, as the TO at that particular point, I have an opportunity to do something about it. You tell me about it, or your friend Simon tells me about it. Not that Simon's come to us about anything.
She just picked Simon for the recording.
You come and tell me about it the Tuesday after an event that we had over the weekend. Literally nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you come and tell me that, I wanted to say Gavin, but not that I would suggest that Gavin would cheat. If you want to come and tell me that Gavin was fudging his dice rolls and moving everything too quickly and you couldn't see any of his dice and didn't know what he was doing, and you tell me about that on Tuesday, there is nothing I can do about it.
No, exactly. So, yes, you should definitely escalate it. I often think that if you're feeling uncomfortable, you've said something already and it's sort of not, you know, it's a bit passive aggressive perhaps, or you're still feeling uncomfortable because they're still dropping whatever it is they're doing in and out of the situation, having a quiet word to the TO and saying, look, I'm having this happen. Can you please come and just observe or be aware? You know, we have had a couple of situations in previous events where I've had a player approach and go, I'm feeling a bit uncomfortable. Would you mind keeping an eye? Mm. And we will surreptitiously, in some cases, or more overtly in others, keep an eye on those tables. Mm-hmm. And then if we see something that's...
And with that, just in case we have ever been hanging around your table, that doesn't mean that that's happened. We do hang around tables.
Check out what's going on. No.
Yeah.
But
however,
part
if
of...
I spent 45 minutes photographing your models, chances are...
You were listening to something.
I'm joking.
No, I mean, we circulate the room heavily anyway.
Yep.
But if there is someone who's feeling uncomfortable, then we will certainly try and hover a bit nearer to keep an eye on what's going on to make sure that, you know, nothing...
Which means that we are able to, as I said, observe and, you know, see that behaviour so that we can actually make a judgement around, you know, how does this fit within everything. However, we need to make sure that people feel safe, but at the same time, we need to make sure that we're not overly pandering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that comes back to some of the cheating allegations that we've seen in recent years at major events. If you feel like someone's not being straight up with the rules, your first thing you should be doing is not accepting it and saying, show me it.
Yep.
Regardless of game system, regardless of anything else, if you're not certain on a rule, you have every right as a player to go, hey man, can I please see that?
Where does it say that?
Be respectful. Yep. Ask for clarification. If you read it and you say, man, I don't think it says that. I think it means this. Mm. And you come to a disagreement and your opponent gets agitated, frustrated, loud, vocal, any of those other things that make you feel uncomfortable, go, okay, cool, we don't agree. Let's get the judge or TO. And obviously, if you're at one of our events, grab Mike or Emma. Yeah. And
if
let's
you're
get
at one of our events, if you could grab Mike, that'd be awesome.
And we'll get them to resolve it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time that will fix things because... You know, that's ultimately the role for a judge or a TO is to make sure that the rules are played consistently and are played correctly.
And I think consistently is really important. We may rule something incorrectly in that we may interpret. Well, punctuation is really important. And sometimes punctuation is missing in some of these rules.
Isn't that the truth?
And so you kind of go, well, if there was punctuation here, it could mean this. But if the punctuation was here, it could mean something totally different. And, you know, or there's actually this third option. But it does mean that we're able to rule it consistently across the day.
Yeah. And there's been a couple of instances over the years where I've gone away, haven't been able to lay my hands. I've gone through the FAQs. I've gone through the rules. Haven't been able to find an answer. And then a lot of the time I will rule it one way, go and take a note, you know, in an iPad or, pen and paper, not so much these days, but generally there's a note written somewhere.
Never a pen and paper.
And you'll actually have me go away after the event for a number of days and ask other TOs. And
which is sometimes really interesting because it turns into a major debate as people argue the two or three different possibilities and really shows that there is that room for disagreement.
And sometimes I'm like, there isn't a clear answer and I've ruled it the wrong way. And that has happened.
Yep.
And when I find that out, I tend to get in touch with the player and go, hey, I actually you know, this is where I found it. This is the answer. I got it wrong. Apologize for that. Moving forward, this will be the way it's ruled.
Yeah.
I suppose the important thing to remember is that arguing with the judge isn't okay, as much as it isn't arguing with your opponent over these things. So, when you look at the Vanguard Tactics video, help people in his position to know what to do. The player in question that he describes is arguing with the referee, is arguing with him, and is outright making rules up.
That's funny.
And when the judge pulls him up and says, no, this is the way it's being ruled, he then continues to argue.
Yeah.
In those cases, if it ever came to that, don't get yourself involved. If the TO has come over and made a ruling for or against you, and then the other player continues to argue with the TO...
The TO or the judge?
Either.
Does it make a difference?
Well, a lot of the time the TO is the judge at these events. It's very rare to have, like, the big events will have
big
both.
Big events have got both. So, you know, in that situation, if you've got if your opponent's arguing with a judge, would you go and ask the TO to come over as well?
No. As long as
I don't think you should either. I think that the judge should be the one calling
the
TO.
Well, the judge has been given the authority.
Yeah.
I know that at ETC, the judge council that runs the ETC, if there is something that is genuinely...
The judge council, sorry, I've just got a little mental picture of them wearing kilts, no shirts, and little judges' wigs.
Neil, if you're listening...
That was just for you.
Yep. I know that Neil was saying to us that he would, if there was something that was genuinely grey... He would go and get at least two other judges because they have, I think, a group of five or six that work together for ETC. And then it was majority vote as to how that worked. And then that was applied so that all the other judges were notified as to how that voted and so that all the other games were played the same way. And then it was ruled and moved on for the event and noted
down.
But
in this situation, it wasn't about it being a grey area.
No.
It was about a player continuing to argue with a judge.
Yeah. And in that case... Don't, like, if you're the opposing player and you're watching that altercation, don't put your 2 cents in, because at that point the judge has ruled on what's going to happen. If your opponent continues to argue about it, that's nothing on you. You don't want to involve yourself in that because the judge has made a decision.
Yeah, I'm trying to work out how to say this in a ladylike way, but it's probably not going to happen. So if you're the judge in that situation, grow some balls.
Well, yeah.
Like, seriously, you need to say that behavior is not appropriate. So as a player, there's very little you can do in that situation. But as a TO or a judge, that is not okay.
No. The whole point of the event is that when someone comes to play, you're the authority.
You're the authority.
They're essentially paying ticket price so that you can make those decisions in the event that your opponent and you don't agree.
Yeah.
So let them make the call. And
allow yourself to make the call.
Mm.
And being bullied by a player is not okay.
No.
And I understand that, you know, towards the end of the day, people are vying for medals or prizes or whatever it is, and passions can run a little bit higher. That's not an excuse.
No. And look, people will lose their cool from time to time. And anyone who has, 99% of people who have with us, have then come back after the fact and apologized and gone, yeah, look, I lost my cool. This is why. I'm really sorry about that.
It's been very few. I think we could say 99.97.
In 5 years, that's not terrible. So yeah, if you're ever feeling uncomfortable at a table for behavior, notify one of the judges. If you're ever not sure about a rule, there is nothing wrong with you asking politely and courteously to see a rule. And if you don't agree with the way your opponent's ruling it, ask for the judge.
No, but in this situation, that's a really awkward situation to be in, to hear your opponent arguing with the judge and to then have to continue that game.
Well, on top of that, apparently, because they were using chess clocks at the London GT where all this took place, which is another thing that we don't agree on.
You used to agree with me.
I don't anymore, having played games without them and desperately wishing I had them. All this has taken place on the non-confrontational player's time.
So they didn't stop the clock?
No, they didn't stop the clock, and it wasn't changed over to the other person's time, which is, I think, at the minimum, that's what it should happen. If you're going to stand there and argue with a judge, it needs to be on your time, not mine. if we're chess clocking things.
Do you think that it should be on time?
No, look, and it's one of the things I actually like from War Machine, where they schedule in, like, a round is 2 hours, but there's a round timer and a chess clock,
yeah.
And the round timer is like 2 hours and 15, but the chess clock is 2 hours.
So that still only gives you 15 minutes.
Yeah,
then, but again, how many questions should you have?
Well, it just means that, yeah, if for whatever reason the judge has to come over and stop the clock to deal with an issue, whether it's, you know, something simple or something complex, or it's a behavioural issue, the player...
It's not on anyone's time.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the chess clock thing you'd have to incorporate. So if you're doing a three-hour game, it'd actually be a two-hour 45 game with a 15-minute buffer zone there for any of those issues. But I think the most important thing to take away from it is notify a judge early, let them know the issues early, and do it on the spot. Mm-hmm. Don't hold on to that for 3 days and then go, I just can't contain myself anymore, I need to vent.
And that's the other thing as well. I kind of think if you don't say anything during the event, don't go home and gossip about it.
Mm.
You know, like you didn't do anything at the time. And maybe that's something to throw out there. How can we, you know, what is it that stops people coming to us? So at our events, if you've experienced something and you've waited 3 days before you've come, why didn't you come and tell us at the time?
Yeah.
What was it that stopped you? And is there a way that we can actually make you feel more comfortable to come and tell us?
Or is there something like we can put a function issue game or a problem game that is only visible to the TOs and yourself?
That pings as it's happening.
Yeah.
What we don't want, and it's happened a couple of times where people have come and told us at the end of a round, or...
It's always better... at the end of the round, it's better than 3 days later, but it still leaves us...
It's still too late.
Yeah, we can't do anything about it at that point. It's past the point of...
Yep.
You know, we can take the other player aside and go, hey, letting you know, that your opponent's had a pretty rough game. These are some of the issues, but we haven't had a chance to see it or hear it or view it.
And if you've got someone who... you know, I used the example before that someone's throwing dice and picking them up before you've got a chance to actually look at them and something.
Yeah.
Then we can't go back and change that for you. We can't say, oh, well, he probably was cheating.
So
and
we'll
so
overthrow
therefore
the result.
We'll change it from that to a 12-8 win in your favour. You know, we can't do that.
No, you need to do it on the spot.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, no one wants confrontation, but we can do it politely and discreetly and not draw attention to it. And it will be hard if you do that and then we have that conversation with your opponent and then you have to go back to playing that game. That will be uncomfortable.
Yes, but that's, I guess, one of the good things that happens with us being able to just come over and notice it. We can go,
hang on, what are you doing? Yeah.
Gary, seriously, can you slow down with picking up those dice? I didn't even get a chance to see anything there. Ha 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 ha.
I think some players respond to that really well. And then other players, you actually need to come over and say, you need to slow that down. Your opponent needs to be able to read those.
Yeah.
And be a bit more firm with it, depending on who you're dealing with. And obviously, if you know the players in the room, and we know most of the players in our rooms these days, it's very rare that we have...
I'm going to be honest, I'm really struggling to remember.
There's a whole bunch of new players, yeah. But yeah, the important part...
Some of them look very similar.
When you got four Thomases in the room or...
Well, that's easy.
Yeah.
If I'd shout Michael, half the room turns around, so that does make it easier for me.
So I suppose when answering his question, help people in his position know what to do and what action to take. The answer to that is notify the judge and do it at the time.
Hmm.
Regardless of whether it's behaviour related, cheating, rules issues, anything you're not sure on or that feels uncomfortable to you.
Yeah.
And if it's a genuine issue, raise it.
Text us.
If you want to. Well, yeah, I mean, like we're on mobile devices the whole weekend scoring.
If you're worried about how it's going to look if you come over and talk to us, and then we suddenly wander over and notice what's happening,
yeah.
Send us a text message.
Well, the players packs that
send
we publish has my number in it.
Just don't send us a Facebook message because that we won't see.
Because the notifications for our Facebook pages are turned off for the events so that we can concentrate on the events.
Because otherwise it would be pinging every 3.5 seconds.
Yeah, because I'm in a lot of groups and a lot of chats. And
I noticed you just signed up to help moderate another group. I was like, why?
Because I'm nice.
You're an idiot. No, you like being in there and having your fingers in all the pies.
No, I've already muted it. I got in there
and
said...
That wasn't helpful, was it?
No, it is. It's the same as a number of other I help moderate. I go in, I check it once a day, and That's why there's a group of us. Mm-hmm. Anyway, highlight foul play in competitive play and what we can do as a community to stop it. This is a really awkward point because...
I feel like that's too hard for this time of night. You've still got to edit this.
Highlight foul play in competitive play. Now, to me, that means malicious.
Oh, see, to me, it doesn't, not necessarily.
Well, foul play is something done, like murder is foul, like foul play.
Jeez, I think you've got a bit but to the end of the spectrum there.
My point is, there's
tripping someone over counts as foul play as well. Like there's a huge range before we get to murder.
I suppose. I'm reading that as malicious intent because I don't think there's a single player in the world that can ever claim they've played a 100% completely clean game. I don't think that's possible.
Ever.
Ever.
Well, does me cheating for
the No. I mean like in their whole career of games, in every tournament they've ever played in, they can't say that every one of their games was perfect.
Okay.
Because we all make mistakes, whether they're...
Yeah. Okay.
So what I'm saying there is there's a difference between understanding a rule one way and getting it wrong and playing it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And maliciously going out of your way to play a rule to your advantage, knowing that you're doing that incorrectly.
I am going to apologize. Foul play definition is violence, especially murder. So apparently there isn't a spectrum.
Apparently I'm just right. I like this.
I don't think foul play happens in gaming.
No, I don't think so.
And if that's happening, you are playing at the wrong event.
Yeah. I suspect you're playing Russian roulette at that point.
Yes.
But I think his point is there is to...
Well, I thought I knew what his point was, but now...
Highlighting foul play and competitive play and what we as a community can do to stop it, to me, implies highlighting players who are maliciously trying to cheat the rules in a game to gain some sort of advantage and what we as a community can do to stop that. Okay. I suppose is this thing. So, taking based on the context of the video, that's the way I read that. Because
so
the player,
not murder.
No, not murder. Okay. So the player in question that he's
all of a sudden cheating seems a lot better.
Please don't use that as a license to cheat at our events. We know plenty of police officers. I'm sure we can sort something out.
Half of them are there.
Yeah, half of them are in the room. So. The biggest thing there is highlight foul play. So to me, that means shining a spotlight on someone who is doing something wrong.
Yep.
I don't necessarily think that's a good thing to do. Like a public lynch mob doesn't achieve anything. It only ostracizes someone, becomes bullying a lot of the time, can degenerate to the point of ridiculous comments and threats and all sorts of things.
And I think it can also have a really negative impact on the community in general.
Yeah.
Like, people don't want to go to an event because of the risk of being put under a really harsh spotlight.
Yeah.
And not that you should just ignore foul play, but there's ways to do things privately and...
appropriately.
Yeah.
I think...
Respectfully. How's that?
Yeah. I think the comment about what the community can do to stop it, the thing the community can do to stop people cheating is to call it out on the spot and involve the judging community.
And the ways that you call it out on the spot are asking to see where that's written.
Yeah. And if it's not right.
It's not. Yeah.
Or if you don't agree, then you call the judge over.
Yeah. And so I've shared this example before.
Before your example, I actually had this happen at one of our tournaments. Someone called me over and said, "Hey, Mike, can you confirm that this weapon has this profile? Because it seems really good." And my response was, "Well, yeah, that's the right profile. That's correct. Did you check the rules?" "Oh, no, he didn't look. I just thought I'd ask." I'd much rather you look at the book and confirm it for yourself, because now you're taking my word over your opponent's word for it, and that makes your opponent feel like you didn't believe them, so you had to check with a judge. Whereas if you turn around to them and go, "Hey, man, like that seems really cool. Can I check out the codex?" There's less accusation there.
Yeah.
Like there's obviously still a level of accusation there. But it also validates it for yourself rather than relying on someone else's opinion, because they're complex games. And as soon as you rely on someone else's interpretation and opinion without reading it for yourself, you open yourself up to misrepresenting it or misruling it for future games. Whereas if you read it yourself, you've got a better opportunity to kind of, you know, burrow that into your brain. Yeah.
Yeah, I think as well, so what I was going to say before, and I know that I have shared this example before, but there was an outpost night, you went along and said, you know, that's not how that rule works, right? Like, yeah, it is. We've been playing that way for how long? This is definitely how this rule works. Oh, I don't think it is. No, it definitely is. Now, that player who was, turns out, was actually playing the rule incorrectly, they weren't cheating. They just had been told that that's how that particular thing worked. And so they were playing that particular game in that particular scenario with that particular unit, you know, the way that they honestly believed that it worked. And it was only when somebody said to them, oh, are you sure that's the way that that works? That they went and actually read the book and went, oh, no, I've been playing it wrong for the last 3.5 years because that's how I'd been told that that happened to work. So if you don't, you know, the time when something's happening, if something doesn't feel right and you don't say to your opponent, does that work that way? Because that just doesn't feel right. Then you're going to go away thinking, my opponent cheated in that game.
Yeah.
That's not fair. And it's lost that game because my opponent cheated.
And it's only compounded if you go away, look it up yourself and find out
that
you were
right. Was actually wrong. Yeah. Whereas if you have that civil conversation with somebody and go in asking an inquisitive way, is that the right way? Is that a word? Quizzitive? Quizzical? Yeah. Anyway.
Let's go with it.
Being curious. How's that? Say, are you sure that's how that works? Can we just have a look and can you show me where it says that? Then it actually gives both of you an opportunity to learn as well.
Yeah. I think there's some parts of the game where those questions will arise naturally because the rules are ambiguous.
Yeah.
When it's a profile stat where someone's saying, oh no, I hit on twos, and you look at the profile and it says threes, that gets a little bit more of a gray area because there's no way of missing, like the only way you can mess that up is either intentionally or, oh, silly me, it used to be like that. So I think when you've got a stat-based number, then it's, I feel like there's more opportunity there for it to be malicious than for it to be honest.
I still think there's a possibility that honest mistakes happen.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And there's a lot of stats to be remembering and that kind of thing. Like, this isn't a simple game of solitaire.
No, none of the games are. Whether it's Malifaux, 40K, Infinity, all of them are complex in their own way.
That's it. It does make chess look like toddler game.
But I think highlighting foul play and competitive play and knowing and what we as a community can do to stop it is about asking the question, verifying the answer, and then letting the judge do their job.
Can I just add one more thing to that as well? Mm-hmm. And I mean this with love and affection for everybody who I've met who's a gamer. There is a significant portion of people who play these games who struggle in social situations and struggle with social skills and social interaction and social cues. That does not mean that he's a dick player.
No.
You know, so I think sometimes it can be easy to make assumptions about the kind of person that somebody is because they don't find it easy to be in social situations.
Yeah, and they'll either withdraw into themselves or they'll go the opposite direction and go full-blown loudmouth, I suppose, is the only way I can think of describing it.
I wouldn't go loudmouth.
Well, you know what
I
mean.
Just
like
opinionated and
boisterous.
Knowledgeable. Well, I think sometimes it can be come across as know-it-all.
Yeah.
And because they run with the stats and that's where they feel most comfortable in that particular situation. But sometimes that the personality of the person who you're playing against, who you might be struggling with, that can really influence how you behave if there's, I guess, some query around whether rules are being bent or outright snapped. But I think regardless of who you're playing, my biggest thing is don't make an assumption.
Yeah.
Actually just ask. Be quizzical, be kind, be curious, and
if it's not right, get the judge involved.
Yeah.
So I suppose the bit I want to take away from all of that, though, is, like you've just said, explore the possibility that they're right, and that that you're right, if it is something that is unfortunately very untoward, or you know, and you're not sure, get the judge involved. I don't think highlighting foul play, how foul play, incompetitive play, and the community then forming a lynch mob, is beneficial.
No, I don't. And I think that, you know, this idea that, I'm not saying it was his idea, but there is kind of this sort of idea that's been ruminating a little bit in the community that we should have some kind of international ban.
Name and shame. And
you know, what exactly is that going to achieve?
Other than less players going to events. And the argument there is, well, less players going, but you're not having the people.
You've got more quality players and you don't have the issues there. Yeah, I get that. I do, but I just...
I think, and I suppose this kind of ties into the third point here. So his third point is the actions TOs and referees need to take in order to protect players, and how being firm and fair is the best way for people to learn. We've kind of covered that in the last two points about organisers needing to step in, take control of the situation, enforce the situations, whatever the result may be, and then stick to it.
Yeah. And if you're thinking about being a TO and you struggle with communication and conflict resolution, maybe think about working on that.
Or go on as an assistant and help at an event and get your feet wet that way, rather than just diving headfirst into it.
And my little tip for dealing with some of those conflict resolutions, I really shouldn't share this, but anyway. So I always go through with people, what would you like to see more of? What would you like to see less of? What would you like to start? What would you like to stop? And then from there, we can work out what we're going to do. Or I share with people, actually, in this situation, this is what I need to not happen now.
Yeah.
And this is what I need to happen. So I go through that. I would actually like to see more of you. I would like to see you slowing down. I'd like to see you taking time for your opponent to be able to check your dice. I would like to, I'd like for you to stop rushing through your turns.
I'd like you to explain.
I'd like to see more explanations happening around what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Well, it's funny because we were playing a card game with our son a couple of nights ago. And it highlighted how you and I learn games very differently. Because Emma sat down to play this card game with our son and he said, oh, this is the way you play it. And within a couple of minutes, they were playing it and Emma understood it completely.
No, I didn't. I totally didn't. But
you understood what was going on.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
He tried the same with me and all it did was frustrate me.
Yes, because you turned into a grumpy little cow bag.
Because I couldn't, that's not the way I learn. And as soon as I was able to step away from it, go to the internet, Google the game to figure out what the rules were, read the rules. And I said to him, okay, now let's have another go. We sat there and played that game for an hour. Because I felt confident in what was going on. So it's another thing to consider is how people learn and how people take things in.
Yeah. And we are very different learners. Yeah. I'm 100% a visual learner and you are not.
No.
At all.
But it's, you know, there's those sorts of things to consider as well. And I think the actions TOs and referees need to take in order to protect players is to be willing to stand their ground and enforce good behaviour, whether that's through a red yellow card system or just being proactive and managing players in a way that, like you've described, explaining to them what they need to stop doing or start doing and so on.
By the way, I've been a CEO for 11 years and I hate conflict resolution and I hate... You know, I hate being in that, it's just awful.
Yeah.
I feel sick every single time. So, but I still take a deep breath and I still do it.
Yeah.
And
I don't think anyone is ever going to be innately fine with it. I think you have to build your own thick skin and build your own confidence and so on. But
the thing is as well, I guess for as a TO or as a judge or that when you've made a decision, you have to stand by it. But at the same time, it is not your position to defend that.
No.
So when we've made a decision or when we've made a call, when we've had a conversation with somebody privately, quietly, discreetly, that conversation from our perspective is over. So we are never going to jump on the internet and go, yes, but actually, here's all the things that this happened beforehand and... We're never going to share that because it would be completely unprofessional.
Yeah.
And I guess that's what I see happening with the red card, yellow card system. It does turn into a, well, now I need to defend my position as to why I did that.
Yeah, look.
No. If I had that conversation with you, you know why I made the decision.
I think the only reason you'd ever come out with that stuff is if the player in question got out and started bad-mouthing and stuff. At that point, defending yourself makes sense.
I still wouldn't. I would still say, made the decision based on the information I had it at hand at the time. I stand by the decision.
I think it's human nature, though, to defend, like to get on.
Oh, I would do it to you privately, but not publicly and not with anybody other than you.
So, yeah, what actions the TOs and referees need to take in order to protect players is
you
to be...
You keep trying to pull us back, don't you?
I am. is to be proactive and stand by your decisions and, you know, make sure that your best interests aren't for your mates. If your mate's doing something wrong, you have to be willing to call them on it. And I've had a couple of my friends tell me I'm unfairly harsh with rulings on them because they are my mates.
You are quite rude with your friends.
That's because I don't want to be seen as favouriting them.
I think you just, with people who you are less close to, you do tend to be a little bit more polite, whereas with people who...
pull your freaking head in.
Well, you would say something like, it's obvious that it means such and such, whereas with, of course it does, those kinds of sentiments, whereas with other people you would go, you would be a little bit more polite with it, whereas you can be quite harsh and rude.
But I don't mean it that way.
And with me... The ruder I am to you and the more I insult you, it does the more I do like you. So it's actually quite nice if I'm rude to you.
You should see how much swearing she does at me.
I know. You freaking annoying.
How being firm and fair is the best way for people to learn? This is in reference to the TOs and referees.
Yeah.
I think both of those things are true. Like if you're firm with someone and fair with them.
Yep.
Then
and consistent.
Yeah.
You have to be consistent, and which is what you were saying before. It doesn't matter if you're a friend, enemy, you can't stand the person, or you're... You know,
yeah,
you want to marry
if
them.
You're firm and fair, then you're giving everyone a fair shake of it, then yeah.
Yeah, but reliable and consistent is really important.
The last comment here before we wrap this up is, if you are a TO or a ref, you have a duty of care for your players, and this is a reminder of what can happen at a table for your patrons. Absolutely.
Yep, I agree with that 100%.
There are douchebags out there who behave poorly at events. They are the abject minority. They are so few and far between.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, human nature says we dwell on the negatives and express them publicly in lots. However, a TO or ref has a duty of care to for the players to try and make sure that everyone has a good experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's essentially what people are paying for. They're paying to come along and play and have a good time and hopefully win some prizes or medals or whatever it is. They're paying for a good time, essentially.
They're coming to... Yeah, that doesn't
sound,
have some fun.
That doesn't sound
it
good.
It doesn't sound right at
we'll
all.
We'll move on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely... I think his point there is, you know, if we can remember that as organisers and refs and judges, that
we do have
someone will have a negative experience. It's our job to manage that experience and try and rectify it.
And we do have a responsibility to all of our players. And we... Well, we don't talk about it, but, you know, we've got a mission statement that says that we run and... You know, something about inclusive and acceptance and all that kind of stuff that I should probably know because I did write it.
You did.
So it does have to be an environment that does make people feel safe and does make people want to attend.
Mm. Otherwise, your events fail from the get-go.
Well, there's certainly your second event's not going to go very well, is it?
Mm.
And people are paying for this experience.
Yep. So... the key takeaways from what must be now 50-something minutes of recording, if you have a problem at the table, deal with it on the spot, do it politely, concisely, and get the judge involved
mm-hmm.
if you need to. And then once it's resolved, take a breath and move on
mm-hmm.
because the judges hopefully have done what they needed to do. Hopefully we will get a chance to have him on the show to chat about his video and his experience at London GT.
Mm-hmm.
I've been chatting to him a lot off, you know, via Facebook and whatnot. We just haven't been able to keep up the interview time.
Yeah.
But as soon as we can get him on, we will. And we'll chat to London GT and his experience for 2019 and talk about the video as well and get his thoughts on it. I know he's a big proponent of some sort of international roster, and I'd love to hear his thoughts and maybe present some of the issues around that with him to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be contrary with him, but to...
To actually have a
conversation,
open discussion,
But anyway,
yeah, we you and I often disagree about things, but I think the more that you can explore your beliefs behind something and the more that you can explore an idea from different angles and different perspectives, the more your knowledge around that area is likely to grow. And yeah, so because discussion is always healthy.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We'll leave it there for this topic. Mm-hmm. And we'll be back in a second to wrap up the episode. You may have noticed I tried to keep us on track for that one.
Yeah, it's not like me to go off on a
And there's plenty more to that topic, and hopefully we can explore some more of those comments and the discussion we've just had when we get Stephen on the episode.
Yeah. So one of the things that you said in the topic part of this discussion was around that it's human nature to dwell on the negative.
Yep.
So I started out by saying that I think it's really important to recognize where we are and celebrate where we are. And so I want to throw a challenge out to actually try and celebrate some of the positive as well. So with that in mind, I just wanted to say I spoke before about the, what's it called, West Oz Miniature Painters Group.
Yep.
So Marcus, who's one of the WA painters, was one of the gentleman who was instrumental in setting up that group, and he has he's recently stepped down from adminning that group, but just wanted to, I guess, throw a public shout out to him to say how incredibly kind and generous and supportive and you know, I guess how generous he has been with his time in that group through encouraging people and offering advice and really, I guess, helping drive that, the growth of that painting group. And I'm really sorry that you've left the group. But yeah, it was awesome how much positivity you shared in that group. And so took till you left for me to actually give a shout out for it. And it's now, you know, Mark is staying on and Dan stepped in as an admin in that group, which is fantastic. But we have so many people in our gaming community who are doing such amazing things. And I guess as we were recording it and we kept saying about how the negative springs to mind, all of these positive things that people are doing were popping into my mind. But I don't want to just name only a few because I'll miss people out. And, you know, but we really are surrounded by amazing people who are being incredibly supportive to so many. And we see it at events when we've got new players coming in and their opponents who are more veteran players are helping them and coaching them and offering advice and input during the game and after the game for how they could have done better or what they could do to improve. And we see it with people offering support with building new armies or, you know, offering to show people new gaming systems, that kind of thing. So we really are surrounded by amazing people doing fantastic things every single day, and we don't take time to actually draw attention to it and to highlight it because we spend too much time focusing on things like whether or not that person should have been given a red card after the yellow cards and arguing with the judge.
Fair enough.
Yeah, finish. You can talk now. You totally zoned out.
No. I was waiting for you to breathe. Like, I'm sure you had to breathe in at some point there.
Circular breathing.
So yeah, it's a complex topic, and
positivity isn't complex, but the topic that we spoke about was. Yep. So.
And it's important, like you've just said, to remember that it's a tiny portion of the hobby, and you have to take stock of that and remember why you enjoy it, and focus on the next game and the next model, and you know, the next weekend of playing games and having fun. And it's easy to lose sight of that, particularly when you have one bad experience at an event and it only, all the negative stuff you read on the internet comes piling back in and you go, oh, this is, I remember, you know.
Yeah, this is exactly what I was expecting, which is, you know, that can be an issue as well with the whole self-fulfilling prophecy thing of going in expecting a certain thing and then making sure you find it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that generally, well, all the events that I've attended have been just really lovely people there.
All the guys I've played around the world.
And girls.
I'm just trying to think. I've played Ghislaine at events.
You've also played girls in our living room. Well, playroom. Yeah.
That sounds a bit weird as well.
Only if you make it weird.
And on that slightly weird note,
I'm just going to say it is really, really late. And if we're going to get this out in time, there is going to be no editing happening to this.
Yeah. So, there's going to be a lot less than I would normally do.
Yeah. Well, normally we would, you know, we'd have the door go and a phone would ring and there'd be all sorts of things. So normally they do take a lot more editing, but we tried to be focused tonight. This was us trying
to be
focused.
It's got to go up before midnight. As long as it goes up before midnight, I haven't missed the
deadline.
Yeah,
but there's not much time. So no, I've
got about an hour and a bit to go.
Yeah, to go through and actually do a proper edit. It wouldn't happen. There's no way it would happen.
No,
so
this is going to be a bit rough and ready. But
yeah, it really
is. If you've gotten with us over the last hour and a half to this point, I think you can forgive us at this stage.
Yeah, well.
Final notes. My elder army is growing and growing and growing because now I'm waiting for the color scheme and all the new stuff from Phoenix Rising, which goes up for pre-order in a few days' time. I haven't decided what I'm going to paint them because of now that they've given us this whole build your own craft world thing. So now,
oh my god, you are...
Now I'm just going to keep building models. So I went out to the dungeon and produced.
I can think of a model you could work on.
If you're going to give me enough time to set up the airbrush and do what
do
I need
to.
Do
not even go there. Oh, my goodness. Don't even go there.
Right. So I said we weren't talking about him and you keep bringing him up.
Yes, because you have had so much opportunity to paint that damn model. I even said to you how many times, why don't you get the airbrush out and go and work on it? And did you? No.
Fine, I'm going to now. By the time the next episode, so episode 53 is 2 weeks away, today,
mm-hmm.
There'll be more paint on that model by the time we get there.
What do you mean by more?
I'm not going to commit to a thing there.
Right, so if you put one tiny splodge on the base,
no,
that's going to count.
First of all, there is no base.
Whatever his foot standing on.
Nothing. He's got feet flat.
All right, okay.
So there is no base. No, I'm going to experiment with the marbling effect.
That you've been talking about for... Well, I've been reading... 10 months.
It's not been 10 months. I hadn't decided I was going to do it until I got the...
Anthony, if you're listening to this, I'm sure you spoke to Mike about marbling this time last year.
No.
I'm sorry, somebody offered to lend you a... Was it Richard offered to give you a plate so you could practice the marbling?
That was after I got the Warlord.
Yeah, well, it was still 10 months
ago. It wasn't 10 months ago.
It was.
Was not. I'm going to edit this bit out. It's only the outro. It's only 7 minutes. I can do that. I'm not going to. I can't be bothered. But I will get some paint on him because I've got to build those 6 warp spiders, 5 of which are basically done, and I've got 6 sweeping hawks to build, and I've got to glue them to their bases and finish his conversion. If you haven't seen it, I'll post it on the Obset Gamers page and whatnot. So I'm doing a conversion of a Sherman.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yep. And I'm trying to decide whether that crest that you've got on the helmet, which is the standard crest from the plastic Autark, which is like a feathered crest.
Yep.
Genuine model has like a horsehair mohawk mm-hmm. instead. And I'm trying to decide whether I leave the feathers, because I actually quite like the look of it.
Yep.
Or whether I cut it down, sculpt over it, and actually put the horsehair crest on the top instead to make it more like the genuine model. I'm not sure.
I quite like the feathers. I think it goes well with the fur.
I might post it onto the page and you can all have a look at it and give me your opinions.
And then he'll do whatever he wants anyway.
Exactly. But I still like to kind of weigh it all up in my head because people suggest things that I don't think of. And then...
Which is what I was talking about before with the, you know, the idea of having open conversations. You don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you open discussions and you do throw things out there, people come up with ideas that you haven't had before.
Yep. And the best thing is if I ruin this head, I've got another one in the bits box, so I can always redo this one.
Well, I think it's time to say goodnight.
All right, we're done. We will see you in 2 weeks' time when there will be more paint on the Warlord.
Mm-hmm. We don't see you in person on Monday.
Yep, at Varsity on the 14th of October.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be very strung out because we're going away camping mm-hmm. for the weekend, so I'm going to be worse for wear on that Monday night. So,
yep.
And it'll have also Oh, that's going to be a really long day. Oh, God. Anyway.
It won't hurt you to do one long day. You'll be fine. It must be really difficult to have to go to the pub. However will you manage? Honestly, and my heart bleeds.
And then we'll be live a week from the recording now on the 16th to say hello. And I will display some extra work done on the Titan because on the Tuesday, when the kids are back at school, I can crack the airbrush out.
No, you can't.
Anyway.
No. We'll catch you in a couple of weeks' time, which is not when the kids are at school.
Have a productive hobby period, and we'll see you soon. Take care.
Happy gaming, everyone, except Michael.
You've been listening to the Objective Secured podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, you can visit our website, objectivesecured.com.au. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/objectivesecured, or you can email us, obsec@optusnet.com.au. Thanks for listening.